Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
And it is the Pomp and Joe Show on a Friday, but it is not Pomp and it is not Joe. I'm Jason Mackey in for the guys, Austin Bechtold producing. I'm excited about this. I love working with you, Limits. And I think it's because you're from Baldwin. We're from the same part of the country.
We are. We're literally like probably 5 minutes from each other, even though we're in different districts.
I know. I love it. You have played a lot of wiffle ball behind St. E's.
Oh,
my
ton
mom
of
lives
wiffle
behind
ball.
St. E's now.
Does she see me out there swinging it a little bit?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I should tell her to go take a walk and go look for the boys playing wiffle ball. I don't know if you'll like that, though.
There's
my
a lot
mom
of us,
starts
though.
Horning in on your wiffle ball action.
Really? Do you think she would start heckling me? Do you think she'd
probably
make a mockery of the league?
I don't know. She might. She might. My mom is an original Karen. Her name is Karen.
Oh, wow.
And she was always very good at complaining about things. Like in a nice and sweet and respectful way, but my mom gave zero craps if we were somewhere and something didn't go well. But that's beside the point. We have our Baldwin-Brentwood shared heritage. Baldwin and Brentwood getting along. Westminster and Waynesburg getting along.
Dogs and cats. Living together.
Mass hysteria. We have a great show for you. I'm excited about this off the top. It's presented by JP Roofing and Siding. A rundown of what's happening on today's show. I want to talk a lot of Pirates. I do. They're back in town. Mets are at PNC Park tonight. And there's a lot of ins and outs to get to. I was hosting the evening show last night. Got to some stuff. We had Jeff Passan on. I thought he was outstanding. I want to get into some takeaways there. But there's a lot to discuss with the Pirates not on the field. There's a lot to discuss with the Pirates everywhere else, really. In the hallway before show came on, it was this, you know, exchange. And this is inside radio, I guess. Limits, you're a part of these conversations all the time. But, I mean, we're just talking about what we're talking about on the air. You know, water cooler conversation. What are the Pirates going to do? How massive can this trade deadline be? What should they do? I think it's a fascinating conversation. And I don't understand what they're doing with the GM, but it goes beyond that. It goes to how deep should they try to cut this? Should it be Mitch Keller? Should it be Ke'Bryan Hayes? Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's easy. Andrew Heaney's easy. Caleb Ferguson's easy. But how deep should this go? What do you think, Limits? How serious should they be about this trade deadline? How aggressive would you try to be?
Well, all the Reynolds should go. And there have been times when they have not even traded Reynolds. Like, could they have got something?
Rentals.
Yeah,
I thought you said Reynolds for a second.
No, not. I would not trade Brian Reynolds. But rentals that in previous years, like who, there was somebody last year they had an opportunity to deal, and I don't mean Rowdy, but there was a different rental. I can't remember if it was a bullpen piece or not, that they had an opportunity to trade that they ultimately did not. And there's been times where, look, somebody else has to want a player that you are offering up. But those guys like Ferguson, like IKF, like Andrew Heaney, to me, are pretty obvious picks. I would be completely fine, and this is a change in tune from last year for me, dealing Mitch Keller if the price is right in a return, which is an impactful bat, and an impactful bat is not them claiming that Spencer Horwitz is an impactful bat, somebody that actually makes a significant difference.
Yeah, somebody with a high prospect pedigree or somebody with actual major league results. Either one, preferably both. It would be great. We'll get into that, of course, to outline some other Pirates topics, but I do want the big one to be the trade deadline and how deep you go. I've got some thoughts on Bubba Chandler, and Limits and I will kick that around. I don't know what – this is a common theme, by the way, with the Pirates. You're probably aware. I'm not completely sure what they're doing, what they've done, the residual effects of that, kind of a strange one. Again, Jeff Passan on with me last night. I'm going to get into some takeaways there. They involve Bob Nutting a little bit, the perception of him, the perception of the Pirates. Will we see a salary cap in baseball when the CBA expires in December 26? I know what I think. I know what should happen. Might not be what Jeff Passan believes. And I want to talk again about their attendance. Have you checked their attendance figures? Not great. Not great. Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette will join us at 11 a.m. per usual on Fridays. Always enjoy talking to Ray. He's brought to you by the Western Pennsylvania Injury Attorneys of LGKG, serving your home team for over 90 years. Plenty to get into, as always, with Ray. We have the Bechtold breakdown at 12:30, I believe, sir.
That's correct.
Got a teaser? Can you warn me?
We'll dive into a little bit of what happened with the NBA draft, and we'll also get into some NFL news and notes from around the league.
I like it. I like it. And the Penguins, you heard Limits talking about that in the update, a very big period of time for them. The draft tonight, the draft tomorrow, not quite free agency. That's July 1st, but I don't think that matters a ton. For the Penguins, they're not going to be super active on the free agent market, but I think they're going to be super active in retooling their team. And this rebuild, how long should it take? Or we may be wrong on assessing it. I'm worried, Austin. The more I read about the Penguins, where that finish line is, I would like it to be more in the immediate future, and those aren't the breadcrumbs I'm picking up. What about you?
No, I'm completely fine if this takes a couple of years.
Like, are you?
Yeah. And it's going to. If you want to rebuild properly, first of all.
But they've already spent a couple of years. I mean, they're already part of the way in.
Right. They're at the bottom, but they also have not had the draft picks to be able to do it. Where now, over this year with two firsts, next year with what is probably going to be a top five pick, hopefully the number one pick. For me, it's all about positioning yourself for McKenna next year. However, that they could be the worst team in all hockey, and I would be completely fine with it because it gives you a 1-in-3 shot, at least odds-wise, of landing the next golden ticket in Gavin McKenna. And that is what I think can accelerate the rebuild more than anything. Now, you could throw Connor Bedard in the Blackhawks situation right back at me. I get that. But do you trust the Blackhawks in their front office or the Penguins in their front office now? I get that there's some questions around Kyle Dubas, but I would rather have that impactful guy and then build around him, especially with Crosby and a couple of seasons left with Sid and potentially McKenna. I'd be all in favor of that.
I wouldn't. I hate that. And here's why. You're going to tell Sidney Crosby 7 years? I mean, that's what that will effectively be. Right?
7 years, you think?
He's already been three. Today, this year is going to be four. When are they getting back to the playoffs, and when are they going to be competitive if you're going as deep as you're talking about? Because if you're going as deep as you're talking about, you got to trade Rust. You got to trade Raquel. You're going to trade Carlson this offseason. I think that happens regardless. I mean, okay, maybe seven's a little extreme, but it's at least five. Well, there's no way they get back to the playoffs inside of 2 years.
No, but they're not winning with those guys now. So why even keep them? Acquire them for significant assets like Raquel. If you want to keep Rust, I'm fine with it to satisfy Crosby and keep him around. And I think Rust could be a good influence. But Raquel should have been gone at the deadline. They should have sold high on him. They should have got a first-round pick. Potentially could have got more. That was a slam dunk no-brainer to me. They screwed up the goaltending situation. Maybe Mirashov can fix that. But he is also realistically a year away from being somebody that you can depend on. So you're already punting on this year pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they have to punt on the next three. I'm fine with punting on this one. I don't think they should be tanking for Gavin McKenna. I just don't. I don't think they're built that way. I think they're built good enough that you can bring some of these guys up here and be competitive starting next season. If you have a guy, theoretically you hired Dan Muse for his development chops. And sorry, we've kind of gone down the rabbit hole of the Penguins, but again, this is an interesting topic. How long are you willing to wait? I want to see it sooner. I respect where Limits is coming from.
I think we all want to see it sooner.
Well,
but
I think you can see it sooner. I think you should see it sooner.
Well, who do they have in the minors too, Jason? Who's in the AHL that's knocking on the door of being a star? I guess Rutger McGroarty?
He's on the NHL club. I would take Rutger McGroarty, Ville Koivunen are going to be both be there. You can maybe get something out of Valtteri Pustinen and Tristan Brose or another guy. I mean, if you have somebody who's actually good in development, Sam Poulin is a former first-round pick. Maybe you can get through to him. I don't know. I'm not propping the Penguins up as like a Eastern Conference heavyweight.
Yeah.
Owen Pickering, if you can get through to him, Harrison Brunick. I mean, those are two of six on the blue line that should theoretically be halfway decent if you bring Matt Grizzlick back. I don't think you'd go anywhere with Chris Letang. again, they've got key moves to make. I'm not, by no means am I saying this is a contending roster, but I have a hard time telling Sidney Crosby that you're going to have half the decade off of going to the playoffs. Like, he's given too much of the city for that. You can take a little bit of a step back, and they should. But full-scale rebuild, I'm sorry. I don't see how you can do that. And it's also weird to me that we've watched the last playoff game with Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, alongside Sidney Crosby, right? Those three will never play another playoff game.
No, they will not, because Malkin, after this year, will retire.
Yep.
Or go somewhere else. He'll probably retire. And Letang is also on the back nine, probably right on probably teeing off on 17 right now. So, I just think that the Penguins were already there. Like, they were still trying to contend. I think the 2 year, well, they've been trying to contend really the last 3 years. But, and I've used this term with Joe a lot, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, fool me three times. Yeah, it's time to change something. It's unfortunate that this is the case and where it is with Sidney Crosby. But it was a great 17-18 year run that was truly remarkable and longer than any other franchises typically have in sports, where they are consistently in the playoffs and have a realistic chance to win a championship. Now, a lot of years were obviously different than others. But now, this is just the natural reset that happens in sports. And if Crosby is along for the ride for it, great. I wouldn't move off of him. I don't think he wants to go anywhere either. It's just the harsh reality of where they are and where they need to be.
Yeah, I mean, I get that side of it. And you very well might not be wrong. I don't know if there is a winner here. What do you think is in Sid's head? I wish he would honestly articulate his thoughts, because there's no way he is happy about just there's no playoffs here. Like, you have to decide, I either spurn the only city where I've ever played if I want to go play competitive hockey, or I stay here and I'm not going to be back in the postseason for at least two and probably more years, and I've already been out for the past three. Like, that is a hard decision, man.
It is.
That is a hard decision.
And Sidney Crosby is the ultimate competitor. But do you think that in his mind, he knows that he's accomplished everything that there really is to accomplish, and that now it's just continuing to
try to get towards
Jagr?
Yeah, but I mean, maybe he knows that. I don't think it resonates with him. I don't think he cares. You know, he's addicted to winning. He wants to win.
Yeah,
I think
that's why we see him playing in world championships for Canada.
Right.
Back to the Olympics.
You could probably look, you're never going to be on some sort of points list or, you know, get individual accomplishments. But as a team, you're going to win. Like, Sid will make that deal every time. I realize that's, you know, farcical in premise, but that's where Sid's focus is. And I have a hard time believing he accepts that. He's obviously got some stroke in the organization. Not that he can go, you know, bang down a door and say, I want you to be competitive right now, make it happen. But that's my argument for this elongated rebuild. Anyway, spent more time on that than I probably wanted, but it's a good topic. We'll circle back to it in the 12 o'clock hour. Also going to kick around some football topics. Austin has news and notes from around the NFL and the Bechtold breakdown. Again, that will be at 12:30. I've got some thoughts. James Harrison brought up something that stoked a thought with me. He was on the Nightcap video stream with TJ Houshmandzadeh. Well, I'm seeing a lot of Steelers with TJ Houshmandzadeh out there, kind of odd, but he was comparing Mike Tomlin to Bill Cowher. And it made me, miss the good old days of having coaches who would jack somebody up, you know? And we've had that a little bit with the managerial side. I think Derek Shelton left some things go. Donnie Kelly addressed the O'Neill Cruz situation in a little bit. So I've just kind of been, I like those guys. There's an important legacy of tough guy, take no crap coaches in Pittsburgh, and we'll get into TJ Houshmandzadeh's comments as well. The TJ Watt situation intrigues me. We're getting some conflicting info there earlier this month. Adam Schefter had some thoughts on it. James Palmer from the Bleacher Report is putting some info out there as well. We'll kick that around, as well as what the Steelers should do. Still looking at a wide receiver. What if they don't do anything? Does that make you feel any differently about it? Bob Walk will be along at 1 o'clock. He always joins us, or joins Pomp and Joe, I should say, Friday at this time. And we're going to have a debate that Limits and I kind of had on Twitter prior to the show. So much talk about these top five Pirates athletes, top five Pittsburgh athletes. Starkey wrote a column on this that I thought was excellent. And I sort of wanted to talk about it, but I don't disagree with Joe. That doesn't work out for a radio premise. There's got to be controversy. We've got to think differently. I was completely in agreement with Joe, though, and how he presented that. But anyway, there have been these conversation topics, Steelers, Penguins, what have you, about the top five of the decade. Well, the top five overall athletes of the past decade. I don't know. I put out a list. There are three that I feel strongly about: Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, LeBron James. I'd also argue for Michael Phelps, the all-time leader in Olympic gold medals, all since 2000. Pretty strong case. You could make a case Serena Williams, Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Limits, who were some other ones on your list?
So I had LeBron, Otani, Tom Brady, Tiger, and Sid were the five that I put on my list. We'll get into a little bit more later. But I also did not include international soccer. The way that I went about this list is I kept it primarily just athletes that have played in the United States for the majority of their career. So that's why I kept it this way, because at the same time, like, I don't know if I can fairly judge Messi. Like, I know Messi is great, but how great is Messi? I haven't seen him. You know, I'm not a big international soccer observer. Ronaldo, the same thing. You know, I'm sure if you go to different places that they would say that there's a great cricket athlete that we would have no idea about because we don't consume cricket in the country, or Japanese baseball, you know
right.
What I'm saying?
I hear
so
you.
That's why I kept it strictly to top five athletes of the past 25 that we have seen in our country consistently on TV in the biggest stages.
That's an out. That's an out, because has Michael Phelps had the Olympics? Have they been in the United States? I can't. I'm going from memory here.
No, because the last U.S. Olympics would have been what? Atlanta 96?
Right. I think.
I mean, they went to Salt Lake in the early 2000s for the winter, but that's still not.
I'm saying summer.
Yeah, that's still not the summer. So,
technically, if you'd put Phelps on the list, that's an illegal.
And maybe it was an oversight on my thought to not put Phelps on the list. I had Steph, Ovechkin, and Mahomes as some honorable mentions.
Yeah.
But Michael Phelps should have at least made my honorable mentions, yeah.
That's all right. It's a tough one. There's no perfect way to do it. But it's Spurs debate, and it's June 27th, so why the heck not, right? We can't talk about the Pirates all day long, but we can talk about the Pirates for the first hour, and I think there's some intriguing stuff to get to relative to them and the trade deadline. I don't understand everything happening with them right now. I've been pretty honest about that. I don't understand why you're keeping the GM, what evidence there is to keep the GM other than you just don't want to disrupt something in the middle of a season. And that's flawed logic. It's at least logic, but it's flawed. And in about a month, the Pirates are going to have a gigantic opportunity at the trade deadline. They have moves that are going to reshape this team in a very big way, or at least can reshape this team in a very big way. Now, there are some easy ones, certainly, but some decisions need to be made that you would like to have somebody who's going to be here, or at least, I guess the inverse of that is you don't want somebody who's on their way out making these decisions. And I guess in more plain terms, what I'm saying is, do you really want Mitch Keller traded by Ben Cherington for a bat? Somebody who has done a lousy job of evaluating hitting, you're going to trade somebody with significant value on their contract for a bat that, let's face it, is going to be pretty darn important to improving where the Pirates stand next year. Like, you're not going to trade Mitch Keller for a guy in the Dominican Summer League. You're going to trade Mitch Keller for somebody who can help the major league club. You have to. And the longer this goes, the more I'm beginning to feel that Mitch Keller could be a goner. Bob Nightingale talked about it as much on the PM team yesterday with Chris Mueller. Passan was on with me last night, said the Pirates are basically listening on everybody who's not named Paul Skenes and O'Neill Cruz. which is completely understandable. They should. The Athletic this morning, Ken Rosenthal wrote about the same thing, and he wrote about Mitch Keller and his sort of candidacy for a trade. And Ken's exactly right. 18 months ago, the Pirates signed Mitch Keller to a 5-year, $77 million extension. Rosenthal writes, the team is in a different place now than it was then, making a trade of Keller possible, if not likely. And this, I hate this. I hate this line of conversation. I covered the Pirates for a handful of years, and there are few players I enjoyed interacting more with than Keller. I respect the heck out of how he was able to turn his career around, how he kept going at it, kept fighting, finally figured it out. And I see absolutely no reason to keep him on this roster. He's 1-10 right now. They're not scoring runs. They need a mechanism to score runs. I'd love to say that the Pirates should go out there and just spend an extra $20, $30 million. That's great. That's what most other teams would do. That's what they should do. But is it what they will do? Come on. You watch these guys. I watch these guys. Saying they should raise payroll isn't actually going to raise payroll. Also, when you consider what has happened to attendance, that's not nothing. That's not nothing. I'm going to go on a quick tangent about their attendance, but it's concerning to me. And it's concerning to me if you dig into how the Pirates operate. A lot of times their payroll, the increase, it's tied to what is made, what is done at PNC Park. Sometimes alarmingly so. Now, it's not that hard and fast. It's not always a rule that like attendance goes down, that means payroll goes down by this percentage. That's not what I'm saying. But when you take a hit in attendance, and the Pirates already don't spend a ton on major league players, you can kind of see the cause and effect there. And when it's substantial, doesn't look good. So anyway, here are some numbers to work through, and then I'm going to explain why this is also concerning. But they've averaged so far 17,949 people through 41 dates. That's down about 3,290 from last season. If you look at their overall pace, that's taking that number, extrapolating it out over 40 more home dates. It would represent the second lowest such attendance total since PNC Park opened. Now, some context needs to be provided within those numbers. We're talking about a couple days in March. I can't remember if they were home, April, May, beginning of June. Kids were in school. The weather has not been great. It's either been rainy or 150 degrees. So, I mean, I'm sure some of that had something to do with it. But obviously, there are other stories, right? Frustration over Bucko Bricks, frustration over the Clemente ad, frustration over a bajillion things. Is it going to get any better? They're 18 games under 500. July and August should be the other two of their major months, and you'd expect some sort of uptick, raise that number, get some people in the seats, and right now, they're tough to watch. They're tough to support. You're going to go for fireworks. You're going to go for the opponent. You're going to go for fun stuff. You're not going to go to see competitive baseball. The first week of August last year, the Diamondbacks were in town. The Pirates brought in 22, 35, and 32,000. I haven't looked at what the schedule looks like for the first week of August, but there is absolutely no way they're bringing in that crowd unless there's a whole bunch of promotions. And overall, if you look at your attendance and they wind up with the second lowest overall figure since PNC Park opened, that's not great. That is going to affect how much they're able or willing or however you want to phrase it to spend next season. So how do you get a bat? You get a bat by trading people. You trade people and get a bat by having somebody who's done this well. What do you know? Ben Cherington has not done this very well or well at all throughout his tenure. It's been one of the Achilles heels, one of many. Wrote a column last week for the Post-Gazette about Ben Cherington trading for bats at the deadline. I'm going from a little bit of memory here, but I think he had 14 total, 8 that have made the major leagues, and it adds up to 0.3 war, according to Baseball Reference. That's how poor of a job Cherington has done mortgaging assets for bats at the deadline. And so now, all of a sudden, we're going to think that they suddenly do a better job of that? No, But at the same time, you're hanging on to the GM because you didn't make a move that should have been made in the offseason. You're down this road. You're having to allow this guy, I guess theoretically, or if you would fire Charrington, you'd have an assistant. You probably wouldn't let that guy trade somebody with the price tag that Keller has either. So, I mean, you've set yourself up for this negative situation. There's no winning. There's no way to come out of that benefiting. And it's just frustrating because the Pirates do have a list of players that they can and should move at the deadline. They should have an overarching goal to improve the offense. And I don't know how they're going to realistically do that because the guy in charge has done a horrendous job of that during his time with the Pirates. Andrew Heaney, Bailey Falter, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, David Bednar, Mitch Keller, Ke'Bryan Hayes, Caleb Ferguson, Adam Frazier. They all should be considered candidates. They should be fielding calls on all of them. I wouldn't have a problem if they traded all of them. But they need to make some impactful moves here. I don't totally understand it.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
And welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. Jason Mackey in for the guys. Substitute Teacher Friday. Austin Bechtold producing Behind the Glass. Thanks so much for finding us and making us a part of your day here on 93.7 The Fan. First hour of the show, talking a lot about the Pirates, the trade deadline, a little bit more than a month out, but I think it's a fascinating story. It wouldn't surprise me if they struck early. There are a lot of opportunities to do that. One of the easy ones, I think, with the Pirates is Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. I don't think it's going to be a lucrative deal. I don't think this is going to be franchise-altering or anything like that, but Isaiah Kiner-Falefa can absolutely help a contending team. I realize if you look at the OPS, 665 right now, it's not great, especially if you balance out his salary, $6.3 million. However, he's hitting .273. I think there's probably more to hunt there in the OPS category. I believe his career number in that department is over 700. He can absolutely help a contender, can play a bunch of different positions. He's not naturally an everyday shortstop. I think it's a minor miracle that we've even gotten to this point. He's played on contenders before. Again, wouldn't surprise. There's a lot of reasons for the Pirates to do it. And again, if he can help a team, it's worth it to give the Pirates something. Now, the question I have is what becomes the succession plan? We expect Isaiah Kiner-Falefa to be traded at some point, whether it's now or whether it's exactly at the deadline. He's going. Who plays shortstop? I wouldn't move O'Neill Cruz back there. I know that. Alika Williams is the only actual shortstop, like person who grew up playing that position and can defensively hold his own at shortstop. I wouldn't bring him up because he can't hit and they need offense. My solution, honestly, is something I think they should start trying out now. Nick Gonzalez, at least in the short term. It's the only thing that I can come up with that makes sense in more than one place. Right? Because one option is to maybe just cover the position. Let's say you have Jared Triolo go there. Okay, well, I mean, he can give you a competent shortstop. He, too, cannot hit. Nick Gonzalez, he's going to be in your lineup every day. Now, Adam Frazier can play second base. That's one option. I'd also be open to an Adam Frazier trade. I think the Pirates, and this is a weird way of explaining what to do at shortstop, need to be mindful of what's happening behind the plate. That involves Joey Bart. That involves Henry Davis. Joey Bart, we've seen this season, is not a defensive catcher, not a strong defensive catcher, I should say. If he's going to be on your roster, and I think he probably will, he needs to learn how to play first base. Spencer Horwitz, you say. What to do with Spencer Horwitz? Well, Spencer Horwitz can play second base. So I realize I'm screwing with a lot of the infield, but if you're going to trade Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and roll your team out the best way possible to maximize reps, don't you want to figure out what you're doing behind the plate? And you got to play. I mean, at some point, you have to give Henry Davis actual run. You can't pull him in and out, in and out. Joey Bart might actually help your team. He might be a part of this thing because of his bat. I don't know. He's not going to be a part of this thing because of his glove. I know that. The sooner they can transition him to first base, the better. That's the way I would operate, at least from now until the end of the season. Again, you trade IKF. Nick Gonzalez becomes a shortstop. Try Spencer Horwitz at second base. Doesn't have to be all the time. Start screwing around a little bit with Joey Bart at first base. See how that looks. And use the rest of the season. I mean, I'd also, Nick York, if he's producing in AAA, cool. Give him an opportunity. Maybe Billy Cook somewhere in there. Cool. Young guy, I'm going to give him opportunities. I have no problem with that. The Pirates might take a look at Leover Peguero, I guess. I don't feel great about that. You could also move Ke'Bryan Hayes over. I don't love that. You have a Gold Glove caliber third baseman. I'd also look to trade Ke'Bryan Hayes. I don't know if that can happen. Again, that's a separate discussion. But I'd certainly think about it. Austin, what would you do? What would your succession plan to IKF be?
Well, I think that moving Spencer Horwitz around and kind of becoming another utility guy is not something I necessarily expected. I would rather see Leover Peguero and other guys in AAA and give them a run, give them an opportunity before you can truly write them off. I think Gonzalez at second. Sure, Termar Johnson eventually is going to come up. Why can't Johnson play short? Eventually, I think that'll be a placeholder spot for Connor Griffin when he gets here. Maybe, yeah. Maybe at the end of August next year. Like, is that too? Can they?
I know, but they need somebody right now. Termar Johnson's not been in AAA. I've watched him play. He's not a shortstop. He might be a second baseman. I don't know, man. Like, who in AAA are they really, like, do you really need to see? I don't need to see Alika Williams.
I don't want to see Alika Williams or Bay. I don't want to see them again.
Maybe Peguero?
Would be the guy that I'd give the opportunity to. Peguero was the first guy that was acquired in a trade by Ben Cherington.
I know.
In the Starling Marte trade.
And Brendan Malone, who I think is now out of baseball.
Yep, Brendan Malone, who I don't think ever got out of high A, I think was the highest level that he ever reached.
I know.
And he was a first-round pick of Arizona. But, I mean, Nick Gonzalez has always been a second baseman who has had, some run at short. It clearly hasn't gone necessarily well to be able to keep him there. So instead of, I do want to see some Bart at first. I agree with you on that. Moving Horwitz around, though, I think you're just shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic of a ship that has already sunk for a lot of the offense.
All right. I mean, that's a greater existential question with the Pirates.
Yeah.
I understand. That's a fair critique at this point, but I mean, somebody's going to have to play short when you trade the guy on the expiring contract that everybody expects to trade, right?
Like, what about Hayes? You brought it up. Hayes at short?
I don't like it. I don't like it. Although, I don't know, maybe he increases his trade value.
Yeah.
If you're a light-hitting shortstop and you're no longer at a power position, maybe that's more acceptable.
You'd probably move him to short because of the defensive abilities but the lack of a bat, just so that you can open up the window for somebody to come in at third base and be a power hitter for, 20 homers, you'd hope.
Right. I mean, you can live with the lack of offense a little bit more at shortstop, I feel like, than you can at third base. I don't know how much anybody can live with an OPS under 600, though. I mean, here's where I'm at with Hayes, and I think that's also an interesting discussion point. Like, if you can get a team with money to spend in other offense in its lineup that doesn't need that from Ke'Bryan Hayes. Excuse me, I should have used the cough button there. I don't know. Like, that's the team I'm targeting. Dad played for the Yankees. There's still affiliations there. Like, it makes all the sense in the world to try to get that done. The Pirates are not getting, even if they are getting a return on investment with $7 million for Ke'Bryan Hayes, it's not the right player. It's not the right player for that spot. They don't need Gold Glove defense at third base. They need somebody who can hit. They need somebody who can hit, period. If he makes 15 errors next season, if they're third baseman, like Pedro Alvarez would be a better option than Ke'Bryan Hayes at third base. I truly believe that. Maybe not if he's airmailing throws into like the 300 level, but you need a bat. Fundamentally, you need a bat. I don't need a glove. I need a bat. All right, we can get to a couple calls here to round out the segment. Again, reminder, we have Ray Fittipaldo coming up around 11. Look forward to chatting some Steelers with Ray. But a few of you have been on hold. Jeff in Cranberry wants to talk about trading Keller. It's a topic we delved into earlier. What's up, Jeff? You're on the Fan.
I'm not going to go down a rant, Jason, and I'll curtail my Cabrian Hayes comments, but you got me started. I think he would be hitting 230 in American Legion right now. But anyway, I'm not going to go there. What I did want to talk about is Keller. The first thing I do when I see that we've traded for a player, like everybody else, is Google him and see what he's done in the past, right? In the minors, maybe a little major league. If we trade Mitch Keller and I have to see somebody that Charrington has acquired who has 6 home runs in 2022 and high double A, 4 home runs 2023, is at 220, but has a high ceiling of potential, I'm going to lose my mind. If we get another,
I know, Jeff, you're going to want him to have actual trade return.
Oh, my God.
You're not going to want a mediocre piece back. I get it.
220 hitter.
Yep.
We are the 220 hitter club. That's what we should be called, the 220 hitter club.
I don't know if that quite has a marketable ring to it, my friend.
If you hit 220, you can end up on the Pirates sometime, and you have 2 home runs and 19 RBIs at the end of June, you can be in the Pirates sometime. Can we just identify somebody with a little pop who is major league caliber? This guy is dynamite, Keller. He's going to go right into the 3 or 4 hole in your rotation. He's a solid major leaguer. He's going to improve any team. We have got to hurt them and take one of their really good batting prospects in trade.
Yeah.
And I just think this team can't operate this anymore. Charrington totally blew it. He never ran one of his database analysts, didn't run the scenario where no one was going to hit, you know, even though.
All right, Jeff, I'm going to have to cut you off there. I'm going to have to cut you off. Thanks, man. Appreciate the call. We're going to have to get to a break here in a minute. It did make me think a little bit, Austin, about Major League. What are you doing back here, Taylor? Couldn't cut it in the Mexican League. What are you doing with the Pirates?
Here you are now.
Couldn't cut it. It's good stuff. We'll get back into some Pirates talk a little later. I want to keep us on schedule, get to Ray around 11 o'clock per his usual appearance. The Fan Hotline, and that's how we'll hear from one Ray Fittipaldo, is brought to you by Sullivan Super Service, provided trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. And our six-pack, there it is. Austin was picking what brand of beer to open up, is brought to you by Bet365. You can listen to the Pomp and Joe Show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at 12 p.m. at the 937thefan.com contesting page. And the 50-minute mark on the Fan is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. A good opening first hour, and we didn't even get to everything that I wanted to. Good plan. I wanted to talk a little bit about old friend Rich Hill, with an emphasis on old. Pitched in AAA yesterday against the Indianapolis Indians. We'll talk about another pitcher on the Indianapolis Indians pitching staff, Bubba Chandler. What did the Pirates do with them? What has happened? What has happened there?
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.